This is Deanna Spingola. It is Friday, January 4th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Diana Hunter. Her website is naturecons.weebly.com, and Weebly is spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y, naturecons.weebly.com. Welcome to the program, Diana.
Hi, Deanna. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you.
Well, it's wonderful always to chat with you.
You too, and Happy New Year to you and all your listeners.
Whatever.
I want to start over?
No, I hope you sent. I hope that I sent you my little Happy New Year.
You did.
I sent it to you know, most everybody that I know, but I'm thinking, gosh, how can you say Happy New Year with all this stuff going on? But I figure, you know what? Doggone it, I'm not going to let other entities interfere with my own little sanctuary and my own little feeling that maybe there's something that we can do in this year, in 2013. Maybe we can inform more people, educate more people, whatever. But sometimes the Happy New Year thing, I think, oh, gosh, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just one of those Friday kind of things.
You know what, Deanna, I think after a while I found that when you talk to other people researching this, you can see how it takes them down physically and I think mentally. And so I finally figured out that if they take the happiness away from me, they've already won.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to make a concerted effort to enjoy it and say, you know what, they're not going to take my happiness and my life away from me.
Good. And that's most of the time I feel like that too. I think this morning what set me off, well, a few things set me off, but I actually listened to Alex Jones. Well, it was just for a few minutes. And apparently it was, I'm not even sure of the dates. My friend sent a link to this recent program, and he went off on a caller and just went berserko. And I thought, oh my gosh, what a lunatic. And I thought about that for 10 or 15 minutes after I got done listening, and I'm thinking, this guy is using anger and intimidation on a mass scale. He is using anger to control the way that his callers relate to him and to get his callers into a certain subjective mentality so that they're going to be afraid to engage him in anything but the most insignificant things.
Absolutely. I think that's right out of Tavistock. And
yeah, he's psychopathic.
Well, he's just nuts. I mean,
right? But
he knows what he's doing.
Absolutely.
When I started listening, when I listened to him for maybe a couple of months, and this was years ago, and it finally I realized that this man makes you feel like you want to go into your garage, curl up in a ball, or hide in a corner and curl up in a ball. So what does that do? It renders you inactive.
Yes. Yeah. And gosh, I'm usually a very happy person despite what's going on. I laugh a lot. I find joy in my life. But after listening to him, I mean, it was atrocious. Why do people listen to him?
I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, he's giving out giving some good information. Well, I don't care how good your information is. If you never say who's really at the root of the problem or the head of the snake, whichever term you prefer, a.k.a. the Zionist Jews, Talmudic Jews, whatever term you'd want to use, which Alex Jones never does, then he's not doing you any good.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You are correct.
And so I don't care how much, and the information he gives you is just, you know, it's fear-mongering.
Absolutely. Totally.
And so I can see, people have sent me some links to his video saying, oh, you need to listen to this. Really, I can't stand more than about a minute of it. I won't listen to the man.
Indeed. Well, I listened to him for probably 10 minutes. And it was just a real downer. And I'm also thinking about this other guy that's going on these radio programs. He's some sort of pastor, Butch somebody, and
yes,
saying that they were going to confiscate all the guns. And I'm thinking, okay, let me think about this here, that they're going to confiscate all of the guns. You're not going to be allowed to have any guns. So what is that going to do? What is the objective of this man's rhetoric? And that's what you always have to think when you listen to anybody. You're going to think, well, gosh, I guess I won't go out and buy that gun if they're going to just come along and take it from me. And that's the objective. They want to
Absolutely.
Keep you from protecting yourself.
Well, I was sent, that was one of the video, the YouTube videos that I was sent, and it was, let's see, it was published on January 2nd, 2 days ago, by the Alex Jones channel. It's called Feds Training Local Police to Confiscate Guns. Editor's note, the caller in the video below identified as Lieutenant McCoy of a North Carolina police department told Pastor Butch Poe on December 28, 2012, that police are training for martial law this year. And I listened to it. I did get through it. It was about 20 minutes of you know, which was hard on my ears. But there again, they're always saying martial law is going to start. They're always saying they're going to kick in our doors and we have no hope.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Deanna, with, I'm going to say at least 100 million very well armed and very ticked off Americans. Who outnumbers them?
Exactly.
They are playing a psychological game with us. And as far as I'm concerned, it's very easy to say, oh, I have this source or I have that source, but they never name them. Well, then you can never check about their credibility, can you?
Right, right. And this Pastor Butch is he's into condemning the Muslims and talking about Sharia law and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I mean, you have to look at a person's body of work before you can decide whether or not you want to trust anything that they say.
Well, I agree. Why don't they start talking about the Noahide laws?
Which are already passed.
That in 1991, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or all the evil coming out of the Talmud that is so pervasive across the country and getting into our laws now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear about that.
Right.
And, you know, and that's why, Alex Jones to me, if this weren't so serious, he would be laughable.
He is pretty laughable. I was laughing because he was just, it was on a video because I guess he does his radio program so that you can actually, that you have to watch him, I guess, if you really want to do that. But he had these nervous little tics and he kept putting his forefinger into his right ear. And I'm thinking, this man must have an ear problem. He must have an infected ear. You know, after a while, it became kind of funny. But it was a downer. It was really a downer.
It's always a downer. And you know what? Whether I'm talking on air or I'm listening to it, it finally hit me and I thought, you know what? People have enough of the negative information. They need to start getting something that is creative and what we can do about it and organizing. I'm seeing that all over the internet, that people want to get organized about this instead
right.
of just being the downer of, well, who wouldn't want to just stay home when they say, oh, you know, we're going to have foreign troops, we're going to have the UN troops, and on come kicking in your door. Well, gee, that really makes you want to do something, doesn't it?
Right. And then if they have all this stuff on TV talking about, or you know, the programs on TV, the cop shows, and boy, are there a lot of cop shows. My goodness. And they all manage to show the police doing something that's totally illegal and totally tyrannical.
Well, that's right. And then people say, for instance, on this one article by, what's his name? Somebody sent me the link and asked me my opinion of it. Doug Hagman. I'd never heard of the man. But I looked into it because since I'd never heard of it, I thought, well, I better read the article from the Northeast Intelligence Network. First thing I do before even reading the article is in the middle of the page on the left-hand side, and it does not look to be an ad like something that maybe Google AdSense would put on because it is not clickable. And there's a big star of David and
right.
an Israeli flag waving and saying, we stand with Israel. Well,
right.
if it's not clickable, to me that's not an ad. It's a,
it indicates his loyalties.
That's right.
There's other things, too. There's other websites that I visit that are absolutely anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, and all of a sudden, they're advertising, or if they do have an advertisement, if, you know, a lot of websites do these little banner ads that they sign up with. So I don't know why they do this. I don't have any ads on my website. But
nor do I.
Now they've got somehow the official United States Holocaust Memorial Museum has now bought into this banner ad situation. And I told this one fellow, I said, look, if you're going to advertise for the United States Holocaust Museum, then you're just doing a lot of discredit to your website. He said he wasn't even aware of it.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if these are getting on through Google. You know, to be fair, I will say that. But it's their website. You know, you should know what's on it.
Right.
And I don't like a lot of ads on a website anyway, because to me it's too much of a distraction from the information.
Oh, absolutely.
And isn't that what we're trying to get out?
Right.
And getting back to this one article that they were just came out December 24th, 2012 from, I believe it's Doug Hagman, and it's called The Latest from DHS Insider Part 1 and Part 2. I looked at it, and on one of the sentences it says, quote, DHS is turning the police into soldiers, unquote. But they don't tell you how the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, obviously, is now training our police and our military.
Right.
Nobody is saying that. For instance, this is off of Press TV. During the Bush administration, Israeli-American dual citizen and director of Homeland Security, Chertoff, mandated that American police forces be trained by Israeli groups in crowd control, counterterrorism, and intelligence gathering. It says, since that time, shootings of unarmed civilians have gone up 500%. Attacks on legal political protests by police have become a scandal, and huge stockpiles of ammunition and military heavy weaponry have been distributed to law enforcement groups in every region of America, both locally and federally controlled. But nobody's talking about that.
Well, they
you know, they just want to pin it, trying to say, oh, it's DHS. Now, I'm not saying DHS is not at fault.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that for a minute. But when you don't get, there again, you're not getting to the head of the problem.
Right.
Or that I found this off of right off of an IDF website, U.S. Marines train at IDF Urban Welfare Training Center. That was well over a year ago. And one of the quotes from that, this is just amazing. Quote, this trip was a serious wake-up call. Now, this is a U.S. Marine saying this. Said Sergeant Haddenbach, the instructors at the Adam base took the time to explain to us what's been going on in Israel, and we realize that Israeli people are just like us. We now better understand what Israel really is, and when we go back home to the U.S., we can tell people that, unquote.
Well, it depends on what he saw as just like us. Well, perhaps he is right to a certain extent. But I don't buy into that completely. Just like us. What does he mean by just like us?
I don't know. Let's see. He also said, this is just another quote, but it's not by the same person, I don't believe. By training here, Hospital Corpsman HM1 Raymond Price elaborates, quote, we can better combat terrorism at any area and field. He continues, coming to Israel has been an inspirational trip. It's beautiful to see how Israel has managed to preserve so many years of history, culture, and tradition, unquote.
Well, yeah, if you go in and steal it and take over the industry there and everything else. I mean, these people that are going over there, well, if you're in the military, you're brainwashed to begin with. And if you're going over there and you're saying that it was inspirational, well, obviously you're missing a lot of stuff. They probably didn't take these people to the Gaza Strip. They didn't take them out to see the Palestinians and how they live and the horrible conditions that exist among the Palestinians because of what the Israelis have done. So I don't know. In my opinion, I mean, it is so blatant. We've been fighting, doing their battles for them for decades and decades, and now they are going to be the teachers. They are going to be the mentors. They've always been terrorists. I mean, they were terrorists in the 1870s, 1880s in Russia. And now they are teaching our police to be basically terrorists. That's what they're doing. Because that is not the function of the police. That was not the function of the police decades ago in this country. The police were supposed to help to protect the innocent, to protect, you know, to be the cop on the beat, the friend. He wasn't all dressed up in SWAT gear. He didn't carry some great big gun. He didn't look the way that he looks now. He was the guy you went to for help. And now he's become, what, a terrorist? Because he's being trained by the Israelis? Wow, that's pretty scary. However, the person, Hagman, the insider at the Department of Homeland Security, who is the insider? Do we believe this guy? You know, you have to ask those questions.
When I read the article, I never saw the word Zionist, Jew, Israel. I never saw anything like that in there.
No.
It's the same thing that Alex Jones is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I grant you, I've had a lot less look at Doug Hagman's work than I have Alex Jones. But this is just something that hit me right off the top. And, you know, since I'd gotten the email asking for my opinion, well, I gave it.
Right.
And that's what I find. I can't believe that they would say something about how DHS is turning the police in. I mean, that one sentence shows you how they can take information and with the act of omission, they're completely changing the trail of who it should lead to.
Sure.
Or does lead to.
Yeah. Well,
and that's what upsets me.
Yeah. The whole idea of the Department of Homeland Security following a terrorist attack by the Israeli government in conjunction with the CIA and the Mossad, I mean, essentially, the Department of Homeland Security is an Israeli agency.
Exactly, and I believe Brother Nathaniel espouses that as well. There's another article. Israel. This is the title: Israel Behind Much of Militarized Brutality of U.S. Police. And it was I found this on Rents, and it says, according to Blumenthal, the transformation began after September 11th, when American law enforcement officers began to look to the Israelis for counterterrorism expertise. And in response, the Israeli lobby, quote, provided thousands of top cops with all expense paid trips to Israel and stateside training sessions with Israeli military and intelligence officials, unquote. The Anti-Defamation League has also provided Israeli-run training sessions to over 700 police officers through its course on extremist and terrorist threats, and claims to have provided a background in Israeli perspective to another 45,000 through its law enforcement and society program, which is required training for all new FBI agents.
Wow. That word perspective, the Israeli perspective, hasn't this country for the last several, I keep using the phrase last several decades, but hasn't this country looked at the world through the Israeli perspective? That, what is that, the enemy of my enemy is my friend? Or,
yes.
Well, in this case, it certainly applies that the enemy of Israel is our enemy, the United States' enemy. And so, we've been looking and taking the side of Israel, well, since they were born, basically.
Well, and so many people, but they are waking up to the plight of the Palestinians. Do we really want to be treated like that? Because that's what's coming. Or will come if we don't stop this.
Well, that is what has happened to many Americans who are already living in their cars because of the banking situation, because of the huge transference of wealth from the people upwards to the people who are running the government, which happens to be another country in this case.
I found another YouTube video, and I think it really applies here with all of the press coverage over the Sandy Hook shooting and all these gun-grabbing idiots that have gone into full mode. They want to take everything away from us and stop the Second Amendment. But and I'm going to send you this link, Deanna, because you'll like it. It's entitled, Israeli Army is Training Jewish Paramilitary Group in the New York Woods.
Wow.
And it's just a few minutes, but it talks about how these IDF veterans are training in New York. And believe me, they've got some pretty nasty-looking guns, not sure what it is. And the first thing out of their mouth is, we want to be able to protect our families. Hmm. Is that not the same thing that all of the American citizens want to do?
Right.
But you don't hear anybody coming down on them for it, do you?
No.
Well, that really upset me.
the U.S. taxpayer, I read a title this morning, the U.S. taxpayer is funding the Israeli women so that they have guns. So why can't, you know, I mean, it's a little hypocritical. They don't, when you look at the people in Congress, the Barbara Boxers, the Dianne Feinsteins, they have guns, but they don't want us to have guns. And I have a photo on my schedule page of the Obamas walking down the street with, surrounded by people with guns in order to protect them. And I can't remember the phrase that I have, but it's really quite hypocritical also, because it is you know, they want to be safe. They want to be safe, and yet they don't want us to have guns, of course. Let me just find that so I can give the correct phrase.
It's the same thing that's coming out of Hollywood.
Right. Oh, yes, of course. Absolutely.
I mean, of course, that just drives me crazy, but...
Guns make us less safe. And here they are walking down the street, and they need to be protected by all of these Secret Service who are surrounding them and have their weapons drawn. And yet he's saying, "Oh, guns make us less safe." Well, how about you? You are being kept safe because you are protected by all of these guns that prevent people from taking out their absolute anger against what you've done to this country.
Gun Owners of America have a great section on their page, and I think it's under self-defense stories. And it's stories that you will never hear in the media about how people the gun carriers have actually stopped crimes in progress.
Right. I think there was one... where was it? Was it just in Texas recently?
San Antonio, yes.
Yes. An off-duty policewoman, I believe it was, prevented a gunman from killing a bunch of people in a theater because she had her gun and she prevented that. But you're never going to hear that in the mainstream news at all. All you're going to hear is about... the poor children from Connecticut. However, I do have a video on my schedule page dated Monday 12/31. It's called Robbie Parker, and it is a video. It's not the one where he's all laughing it up, and then all of a sudden he gets in front of the camera and in front of the in front of the microphone, and he's got to kind of readjust his mental his mentality and get sad and everything, and then he delivers a speech and where he's tearful and everything. No, this isn't that one. This is a video showing on December the 16th. First of all, it shows a picture of the Parker family with three little girls, the mother and the father, and Emily Parker has a red and black dress on. And this was taken pre-December 14th. And yet, there was a picture of the Parker family meeting with Obama on December 16th. And you can tell it was the very same day. And you can also ask questions, well, if Emily Parker was shot 2 days ago, why is she in this picture? Why is she sitting on President or on Obama's lap? What I think happened and what the people who shared this video, what they think happened is probably the photographer or whomever was directing the photo shoot with Obama said, okay, bring the Parker children out. And they inadvertently brought all of the children out, including the one that was supposed to have been shot. And that is in this video, and it's on my schedule page for Monday, December 31st. It says Robbie Parker.
I've heard about that. I had seen the one where Parker was laughing, and I thought... I was more upset when I have had a beloved pet pass away. I'm no good for weeks after something like that.
Absolutely. And you see other supposed parents talking with other newscasters, and they're just, they seem fine. They seem totally unpassionate, just like normal people. And honestly, if I'd lost a child to violence,
you wouldn't want to be on TV, would you?
No.
I mean, would you really want them entering into your grieving process at the time?
No.
Of course
no.
not.
Definitely. And I also have on December 31st, 31 interesting questions about Newtown shootings, and they're questions that need to be looked at, evaluated, and get somebody to think about these things instead of just accepting the government's version of this.
I think they really showed their true colors in this, don't you? And I think everybody you know, the alternative media was very good at bringing out all the problems with this, all the glaring mistakes on it. I think they're realizing that people now are not, they're not nearly as easily fooled. Don't you think?
I hope so. I hope that people are waking up. I really do. And to use children, to exploit children in this manner is just unthinkable. And yet that is what they're doing. That is what they're doing. Playing the sympathy card. You talk about children being slaughtered, you're going to get sympathy.
Of course. And it was the crypto Jew, Lyndon Johnson, that signed in the biggest gun control law. I think it was, back in the 65, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did a lot of nasty things in 65.
Yes, he did.
He's a bad man.
I wanted to point something else out, Deanna, about these, the name escapes me, of the newspaper that published the permits of all those two counties of gun holders.
Didn't you say it was a Gannett newspaper?
Well, Gannett is the parent company.
Okay.
I cannot remember right off the bat.
Yeah, it was a New York newspaper. I can't remember which one it was either.
Anybody can just Google it or do a search on it. Well, I found something. I thought it was quite good that since they were so quick to publish all of the gun holders or gun owners.
It kind of makes you think that maybe they had them. It's like publishing the 19 hijackers. Don't you think that they kind of had this all? I mean, you can't just all of a sudden publish a list within. When did they publish that? We need to think about this.
I think that was at least a week. That's a good point. That was at least a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait a minute. No, it was before that because I found it, and I'm going by my date. I remember sending it to you, and I think that was on Christmas Eve.
We need to look at that.
In fact, I can look at it, I believe, right now. Let me see.
Yeah, I'm doing it too.
I think if you've got, I don't have my...
At the list, let's see.
It should be, if you can look on the 24th, it was something about...
Yes, let me just look. Newsmax had something about it.
Well, it was breaking that night, and I'm almost positive it was the 24th of December.
Okay, but that was, 10 days afterwards? So... How long in advance did they get this list together? Or do they just have some sort of list that's in a computer database somewhere? But you just have to wonder, how did they put this list together? Do they have lists like this in every community? Is this from FOID cards? Is it from register? Well, you have to register a firearm. And so they probably have it in some sort of a database. But how do you all of a sudden get, the government and the media work together because the government controls the media and has since 1927.
Well, they were going to continue doing it. They were going to put up more of them. And I did read that one of the counties has told them no. They were going to give them the records, and they said absolutely not, we're stopping it right now.
Good for them.
And they finally stood up. But this is the interesting thing that, what I was going to say was a lot of, I read those articles and the comments on it, the people were just going wild. And so they started publishing the names, address, and phone numbers of all of the upper management of that newspaper, which I thought was great.
I thought that was wonderful.
I mean, on one article, I probably saw the same thing 60 or 70 times. And then other people were picking it up.
Yes.
So I thought, let's take a look at Gannett Broadcasting and see who some of their people are and if I find anything interesting on it. We have a Gracia C. Martore, M-A-R-T-O-R-E, president and CEO of Gannett Company, Inc. And she's executive vice president and financial officer. Or is that formally? and this is right off of their webpage. The interesting thing, other directorships, FM Global and Midwest Tobacco Corporation. I'm going to give you a couple more of them, and I'm going to tell you what all of them have in common. Arthur H. Harper, managing partner, board committees, executive compensation, nominating and public responsibility, the directorships, Monsanto Company.
Huh.
We have Scott K. McCune, vice president, director, integrated marketing, the Coca-Cola Company. We have John Jeffrey Lewis, co-founder and former chairman. Now, remember, I got this right off the site. These are all the board members of Gannett Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to John Jeffrey Lewis, other directorships and trustees, F.C. Johnson and Son Incorporated. He's also a commissioner with the U.S.-UK Fulbright Commission. Now, those four are not only on Gannett Broadcasting, but they are also on the Nature Conservancy's International Leadership Council.
Hmm.
Which you find the same companies over and over again on this. And it links it back. I'm starting to really look at all the links of all of these so-called green fill-in-the-blank your own adjective groups.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Neil Shapiro, who's president and CEO, WNET.org. His other directorship is American Public Television. So
mm-hmm.
how much, and yet these are the people that are parent company to the ones who published those permits.
Right. Because certainly a newspaper, small newspaper, is not going to do something that drastic without seeking the permission of the parent company.
Well, I wouldn't think so. And I've read where they, it seems like they are going to keep expanding the amount of printouts that they do.
Right. And what they're doing, they're criminalizing the gun owners instead of... And by doing it in such a right after this horrid event, they are really, they're trying to link the two events. They're trying to link or associate what happened to these children to these people who had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with it. But they're making the linkage. They're making the connection. And so in people's minds, people will say, oh, gosh, this is such a violent country, and people are shooting and killing children. And look at all these horrible people that have guns. Oh, my goodness. Who knows when they're going to come and shoot us?
Well, maybe they'll be happy when they're like England. And back in the 1990s, I think it was late 1990s, there was a very famous case over there. It made the international news, I believe, where a farmer and his wife, their house was broken into. Now, farmers over there are one of the few people that are allowed to have, I believe it's, I'm not sure how many, at least one shotgun to protect their livestock. At any rate, there were three or four little brats that broke into the house or were starting to break into the house. And the farmer was defending himself. I think he shot two of them, if memory serves me, but I don't believe either one of them died. I think they both made it out. And to make a long story short, who ended up with the real problem? It was the farmer.
Wow.
And that carried on for months and months. His trial. It wasn't, you know, everybody was, they were saying, not the English people, but the English government, well, these poor people, guys, you know, you can't shoot them and defend yourself, even if they are breaking into your house. And over there, if someone breaks into your house, Deanna, and they have a large limb of a tree, well, you're only able to defend yourself with the same amount of force.
Wow.
So you got to find something that's not bigger than what they're coming at you with. Otherwise, you're in trouble.
The problem is that the criminals are always going to have guns. They are always going to have guns. And even if you look at, and you mentioned England, if you looked at Australia, with their gun laws, the crime rate has gone up. There are more robberies, more killings, more rapes, more violence. And it's because they don't take the guns from the criminals. They just take them from the law-abiding citizens. So what they are setting up, they are setting up some of the same kind of situation as exists in Mexico, where you have all of this violence, you have all of these gangs. And one of my listeners wrote to me a couple of different emails talking about the gangs, and that the authorities are really, what they are doing in structuring society this way is that they are allowing gangs to roam the streets unabated, unstopped, in order to terrorize the regular populace. I think he's right.
Well, I mean, all someone has to do is read about Fast and Furious.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, geez, you know, that didn't work out so well, and yet we want these people giving us laws.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, it is just amazing to me.
Right. If they are going to provide guns to the Mexicans, to whether they're in association with the drugs and whatnot, that's really what they're doing here. Except they're just not confiscating the guns from the criminals. They're taking the guns, or they have intentions of taking the guns from those people who would otherwise protect themselves and probably their neighbors from criminal behavior. When things get worse, if the country runs short of food, or if we have any kind of crises at all, even if you have a truck strike in this country, the shelves at the grocery store are going to be empty in a week.
That's right. And now, I can't remember which legislator or lawmaker in Connecticut, thanks to Sandy Hook, is trying to, I don't know how far it's gotten along, but they want to put a 50% tax on ammunition in Connecticut.
Wow.
50%.
Wow. My goodness.
And all you have to do is look at Switzerland. I believe it's Switzerland, where it's mandated that every person in that country be armed.
Right.
And yes, and they have the lowest crime statistics in the world.
Exactly. Yes. Something is wrong with this picture.
Yeah, it's called gun grabbing.
Yes. Yes.
And what about the drones, Deanna? Have you... Brother Nathaniel brought up a really good one about the Israeli company Stark Aerospace, that is allowed to fly their drones in U.S. airspace over this country.
Really?
Really. And I believe it's that company in Mississippi, where they actually have a warehouse or a manufacturing site.
Wow.
So they're actually able to look, to surveil us. No other country in the world would be allowed to do that.
Indeed. Well, when half the government is dual citizen Israeli, hold dual citizenship, then I guess they think it's okay. I mean, aren't they the 51st state? Shouldn't they be allowed to come over here and look at the rest of us and do whatever the drones do? Oh, my goodness gracious.
I mean, that is really scary. And some of these drones that they have now are so small. They have...
drones? I've seen those. I've seen video of those.
I'm trying to find it right now. I think it's called Switchblade. I do have it up on my site about the drones. And they were originally made for the military, which in our military, they can be carried in backpacks, Deanna. And so if somebody in our military is being shot at or something, they can actually take it out of the backpack. I've got the videos up on my site. And it takes, I don't know, under a minute to turn the little gadgets so they can stand up. They fire them off, and whoever is they're fired at is, let's just say, they can say, beam me up, Scotty, because they're going to be vaporized.
Wow.
I mean, who wants... Now, I'm not saying anything that our military shouldn't have those. But, gee, do you think it might be a stretch of the imagination to think that somewhere along the line those could be used on us?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think there was a survey taken several years ago asking the military forces, asking each individual in a private survey, would you be willing to go against the citizens of this country, if you were told to. And many of them said yes. And it's, I think it's, if you look at...
The 29 Palm Survey.
Right, that's it. And if you look at Stanley, was it Milgram, who did the testing to see whether people would actually do something harmful to... another person, even a stranger, if they were told to by an authority figure, and they do, yeah. Stanley Milgram did a 3-year study between 1960 and 1963, and he describes it in Obedience to Authority, which is a book that he published in 1974. And the question is, regarding his experiment, how far would ordinary Americans go in inflicting serious harm on a perfectly innocent stranger if they were told to do so by an authority figure? And Milgram maintains some system of authority is a requirement of all communal living. Obedience is a psychological mechanism that links individual action to political purpose. It is a dispositional cement that binds men to systems of authority. And so we have been so indoctrinated and brainwashed in this country to render obedience to authority figures, whether you're talking about a school teacher, a principal, a policeman, or whomever. We are intimidated by authority. My goodness, we pledge allegiance to the government. We say, you know, the flag, but the flag represents the government, and we were all taught that. And how do you feel when you're driving down the street and you're going maybe 5 or 10 miles over the speed limit, and a cop pulls up behind you? Do you slow down because you're intimidated? We just have this this mentality that is imposed upon us by the culture that we live in. And certainly his experiments involved 1,000 participants, and most of them had no resistance at all to imposing pain on a stranger because they were told to.
And I can't even imagine that. I really can't. But then I don't play video games till my brain bursts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get into all of this ridiculous war games.
Yeah, the desensitizing all of these kids that all they got to do is push a button and it'll blow somebody up.
Well, the interesting thing was, Deanna, when I was growing up, I can remember... Boy, this is telling my age, but all right. I can remember watching things like Bonanza. Do you remember Bonanza?
Okay, yeah, I do.
Oh, okay. Oops, sorry about that. Well, just say you've heard about it.
I heard about that.
I can remember growing up with the Westerns, during a lot of the Western era. Not the real early ones, but, you know. And, yes, we saw the Westerners, and we saw them shooting each other. But it didn't affect us in the same way that these video games are. We knew the difference.
We didn't interact with it. We were just watching. We were bystanders.
Well, we also knew that, I think the difference is, too, that we realized, yes, guns are, you know, you can kill someone with a gun. They're not going to, a lot of people try to say, oh, kids watching TV today don't realize it's that they won't just get up like they do on TV.
You kind of do, because it's, I think, and I've talked to people about this just recently, it's called predictive programming. Now, the Bonanza series was on from 1959 to 1973.
I didn't watch it in 1959 either.
I didn't either. Yeah, I didn't have TV for quite some time, and then due to peer pressure that the children were receiving then, we broke down and purchased a TV. But when they were little, when they were, you know, 2 and 3, or 3 and 4, we didn't have one. And it was a good thing. And I'm sorry that we caved. I really am. Sorry that we ever got a television.
Well, it just seemed like there is a big difference, and I think it is the interactive point there, Deanna, because it's gotten so much more pervasive. But then that's all part of the plan, isn't it?
Sure. And then you also have more violence, more deviant violence. It isn't just shooting and, you know, watching somebody fall over. It's slashing and you know, deviant violence and sex. I mean, it's just... I don't think you can go to a movie now where they don't have sex and or violence and or profanity.
And see, it has been years and years since I've gone to a theater to see a movie, because I won't spend one penny
right.
for that trash.
Yeah.
And actually, I have not had, I disconnected my cable for television 3 years ago. And do I miss it? Absolutely not. If I happen to be at somebody's house who has it, in those 3 years, I can't believe how much more, even worse, that the commercials have gotten.
We were without it for 8 years, and we were over at a friend's house watching, and we were appalled. Because, you know, it's gradually, incrementally, you just kind of accept it, or you don't accept it necessarily, but you tolerate it, but when you've been away from it, and then all of a sudden you're faced with it, and you think, my gosh, this is terrible. Ugh, terrible stuff.
Oh, it is. It's. I had never dreamed that I would see the type of things on TV that you do now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, my word, yes. And who do we owe this to? Dare I say the J word?
Let's see. Well, anybody wants to look up the Talmud, the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion?
Hollywood, they own it. Yeah.
Well, the last time we talked, Deanna, we were talking about, there needs to be a manual put out where you can correspond everything with, you know, what's going on with the protocols, because it's just amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And it really upsets me that people are not bringing it out.
Yes.
Because it's not fair. We're not getting the whole picture.
Right.
I found something, since you were the first person that I was on air with, you'll probably remember that we originally talked about NALCO and how it interconnected with Nature Conservancy.
Right.
And at that point in time, I really felt that Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife, and all the little green groups were the head of this. Now I have found something. I was just amazed. I kept thinking, okay, after I started looking into, we'll say the Z word and the J word, how's that? Because I'm tired of saying those names. I just knew there had to be a Zionist connection with the green groups and the Agenda 21. Well, we found the protocols. Now I found this, and I'm going to be digging into this a lot deeper.
When you do, I'll just have you introduce the thought of it, and the next program, which hopefully will be in a week or too, whenever you you get all of it together. Just introduce some of the, just a little bit of background to kind of whet people's appetite for your next special.
Okay. Let's talk about the Wilderness Society, because that has been, it's one of them, it has been really paramount. It was founded in 1935 by a man named Bob Marshall. And it says in 1935 he became one of the principal founders of the Wilderness Society and personally provided most of the society's funding in its first years. He also supported socialism and civil liberties throughout his life. Okay, let's back that up. We know who's behind socialism, don't we, Deanna?
Yes, indeed.
Marshall had clearly defined himself as a socialist by 1932 and 1933. He told a correspondent, quote, "I wish very sincerely that socialism would be put into effect right away and the profit system eliminated," unquote.
Now, keep in mind what was going on in 1932-33, that the government was then under the jurisdiction of Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And if you look at his background, it's, he has a socialist background. He really brought in communism full force during his administration. And just the things that were going on at that point in time, the Great Depression, where socialism would appeal to people, where people would accept Social Security, where they would accept, because Social Security came in 1936-37, a lot of things were done during those years. And so it's interesting that he would create a foundation at that time.
Well, and we'll be getting into a lot more of that on the other special with the Greenies, because when I first started putting my website together, and I did a lot of bios on the people of Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife, and all the rest of them, but I never thought to look at the Jewish connection.
Right.
It didn't even dawn on me until just a week or two ago. And it's fascinating because you can see exactly how this is playing out. Now, the really interesting part about Bob Marshall is, remember, he co-founded the Wilderness Society. He was the son of Louis B. Marshall. Louis B. Marshall was an attorney for Kuhn Loeb. Am I pronouncing that right?
Right.
Loeb and Company, and head of the American Jewish Committee.
Right.
And for people to want to see a little bit more about this, the overlordsofchaos.com under the Jewish conspiracy page has some wonderful information. And I just wanted to give that out because that man has done a fabulous job. And this is what he says about Louis B. Marshall from 1856 to 1929. It shows you how far back it's going. Jewish American Zionist intriguer, protege of arch Zionist Samuel Untermyer, and Jewish community leader, head of the American Jewish Committee and Council for Jewish International Users, Kuhn Loeb, in 1917. He was also head of the executive committee of the New York Kehila.
Right. And
okay.
And that is an organization that it kind of functions as the for Jewish life in a community.
And okay, according to this website, saying that Kehila is the active front of organized Jewry in New York,
right,
and the center of Jewish propaganda for the United States. He also goes, well, and maybe we should talk just a little bit about Samuel Untermyer, because I know you've got a lot of information about him.
Well, I have a lot. I'd like to fill in Louis Marshall.
Sure, go ahead. Go ahead.
And Louis Marshall was the chairman of the New York State Immigration Commission. And in 1890, Marshall had helped revise a judiciary article in New York's Constitution And in 1894, he was a delegate to the New York State Constitutional Convention. In 1902, he was a chairman of a commission investigating the slum conditions on New York City's Lower East Side, where hundreds of Jewish immigrants resided. Meanwhile, and this was about the same time that the war was going on, the war with Japan and Russia, which was only a year-long war. But think about that. He was kind of in charge of reconstructing the judiciary in New York, and he was in charge of immigration. And this was at the point in time where so many Jews were coming over here from Russia and bringing their socialist agenda, bringing their terrorist agenda along with them. And he was also, what else did he do? He helped, hang on just a second, let me just, he was in the same commission which had ties to the international banking cabal, that wrote the numerous peace treaties and charter for the World Organization, which later became the League of Nations. And he worked with Julian W. Mack, Bernard Baruch, Walter Lippmann, and others, including Jacob H. Schiff, who created the League of Nations. And they began doing this as early as 1905.
Right, and in the League of Nations, for I'm sure your listeners all know, but I'll just say it anyway, obviously was the precursor to the UN. So people have, instead of people saying, look, the UN is doing all of this, they need to know who is behind the UN.
Exactly, right. And it wasn't the Germans, okay? We always hear all of this nonsense about how Germany was want to take over the world, but that's just not the case. And in 1914, Marshall, along with Schiff and other people like Cyrus Adler, formed the American Jewish Committee, and this was in 1914, along with Louis Brandeis, who was a representative of the General Zionist Affairs, which was created in 1914. And all these people worked together. It's just amazing some of the things that they did and some of the preparation work that they made. It is just totally amazing.
Well, when you connected him with the immigration, because Brother Nathaniel did a great article called A Jewish Conspiracy Behind the 1965 Open Immigration Law.
Mm-hmm.
And it just starts out, the death of America was acted in 1965 with the signing of the Open Immigration Law of 65. And it says, here are the names from his same article of the Jews behind this law. Number one, Senator Jacob Javits, New York.
And he worked in Ted Kennedy's office.
Okay.
And Kennedy's the one that got the bill, support for the bill.
Number two, Congressman Emanuel Seller, New York.
Oh, he's a terrible man.
Three, Leon, is it Pfeffer?
Mm-hmm.
Former president of American Jewish Congress. Four, Norman Podhoretz.
Mm-hmm.
Writer and member of the Council of Foreign Relations.
And a former Trotsky.
So that was a very interesting correlation between Louis Marshall with the immigration. And I saw something very interesting. I can't remember the source of it right now. Might have been Brother Nathaniel, where it said that when we all get those lovely little census things that we so hate to fill out, that the Jewish people are the only ones that do not fill it out, that the census has never had a really good feel of how many Jewish people are in this country.
Right, exactly. Now, Seller had been working on immigration for at least 40 years.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he's the one that formulated, along with Hart, the Hart-Seller Immigration and National, what's the name of that bill? National a Nationality Act of 1965, and they railroaded it through Congress with the help of Ted Kennedy. And Representative Emanuel Seller is, of course, Jewish, and he worked with Philip A. Hart of Michigan, and this act destroyed the 1921 pro-American national origins quota society or system of 3%. So it really opened the floodgates.
And there again, Deanna, just like the Agenda 21 is not saying how it's connected to the protocols, and it's something I want to look into deeper. How many of the anti-immigration people, and maybe possibly they really don't know about this, I don't know, but how many of them are not bringing out who was responsible for the our open gates?
Right.
You know, why? I would really like to know. Is it lack of information? They honestly do not know, in which case that we can fix that. Or are they stopping it right at the point that people should know about this but don't?
Right.
I don't know, you know.
I don't know. I think the last time that we were on together back in December, I asked you how long you had been doing research and when it dawned on you that there was an element, a thread throughout all of the research that you've done that always took you back or that took you back or introduced you to the fact that there was one faction, one entity behind all of the programs and all of the problems.
And I've really been looking at the whole Zionist Jewish connection for maybe the last year.
Mm-hmm.
It took me about probably 2-3 years to find it. But I do it backwards, Deanna. I kept thinking there's got to be a common group here somewhere. And when I started seeing everything about the Zionists, I thought, all right, instead of looking into Agenda 21, I always do it backwards and say, okay, I will do a search for, say, Zionists and Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
the Talmud. And it was you and Brother Nathaniel that really I started connecting the dots with that.
But what about people who have been in the so-called truth movement for 20 years and they are still saying, oh, the Nazis did this and the Nazis did that, or they're not going to use the J word at all? And you even have publishers that, in fact, I had a publisher that would not allow me to use the J word in my book. And so, of course, I went ahead and self-published. But you also have the gatekeepers who deliberately will refuse to address the issue, and they're either paid, okay, they're either intellectually lazy or intellectually dishonest. If people are not willing to say exactly who is behind this, then you have to look at either choice. Either they're lazy or deliberately withholding information.
I absolutely agree with you. Or they're so scared to be labeled something. You know what? What's that old saying? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Right.
You know what? And it's even been proven as far as that. I even hate to say the word anti-Semitic because
mm-hmm.
I'm so sick and tired of it. But that's been, you know, there was a great video put up where they actually admitted how they used that.
Right. And that
and so what are people afraid of?
Right. And who did that video? Democracy Now.
It was Amy Goodman.
She's Jewish.
Well, I don't normally listen to Democracy Now at all.
And that was a good, she did a good thing.
She did a very good thing in that.
And she was also very, very close to the person who wrote Blackwater. What's that guy's name? He interned with Democracy Now, and he wrote Blackwater, the book exposing the Prince Eric Prince and all the shenanigans behind Blackwater, but didn't say the J word. never mentioned a J word. And so essentially what they were doing was let's distract people. Let's distract them over here. And before we went on the radio, we were talking about, okay, how do you recognize who's Jewish and who's not? And sometimes it just doesn't dawn on you their ethnicity if their name doesn't end with Berg or Stein or something like that, Goldman or whatever.
I agree with you, and I think that's why some of the leaders of these groups need to be contacted and shown the connections of it. And then if it's still not coming out, because look at even just the two things, all of the people that are bringing out Agenda 21 and the illegal immigration, if you had those two, which are pretty big groups now, if you had them connecting that with this, look how much further along we would be. It would be huge, Deanna.
Right. Well, okay, getting back to Blackwater, Jeremy Scahill wrote Blackwater. But if you go up the chain of command, the food chain, you'll see that Democracy Now! Is funded by, guess who? A Jewish organization. I believe it was probably Soros. And so we have to learn to recognize the gatekeepers in the so-called truth movement and recognize what they're doing, why they're doing it. And even if they once in a while admit to something, to say, oh, yeah, Israel did this and Israel is behind this and we don't like what Israel is doing. But then, okay, well, that's Israel, but what about all the stuff that the Jews are doing in this country? Or what about all the stuff that the Jews did in Germany? Or what about all the stuff that the Jews did in Russia? What about all of the other countries? Forget about what's going on in Israel, because Israel just came into being in 1948 as the Israeli state. What about all the stuff before that? What about World War II? What about World War I? What about the Bolshevik Revolution? What about going into the Philippines and taking all of those assets? And you know, you have to look at the whole picture and not just oh, well, we don't like Israel. Well, you know, if you're not saying something bad about Israel, then you're just kind of brain dead. And people are going to look at you with suspicion if you don't find something wrong, negative to say about Israel.
Well, and really, since when did telling the truth become evil?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know what they're afraid of, Deanna? And I saw it. Somebody, a friend of mine, had sent me. I had seen it before, but she reminded me of it. And it the Bonus Army.
Oh, yes. In 1932.
I've got it up on my website. Mm-hmm. The disabled veterans. Did a wonderful three-part series on it called The March of the Bonus Army.
Right. It's a nice little video series.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And what it, for people who have not heard of this, what it was the World War I veterans, and that immediately got me because my great-grandfather was fought in that war, as did his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they were they wanted to be reimbursed.
Well, they were promised a bonus at a certain point in time, but during the Depression they needed it now, and so they did a little march on Washington, and they set up in a park across the river. I can't remember the name of the river. And they weren't being unruly or anything. And MacArthur blamed, he said, oh, 97% of those people are communist, and oh, it was terrible. They shot and killed several of them, burned. I mean, they brought out the heavy artillery to use against these people.
Well, not only MacArthur, but Patton.
Patton, too.
And
mm-hmm.
Eisenhower.
Eisenhower,
and,
absolutely.
I can remember, because I've just seen this video, there was a soldier named Joe DiAngelo
mm-hmm.
who got the, what was it? a medal, was it Medal of Honor? I think it was, for actually saving Patton's life.
Right.
He was in there with this group. He went to talk to General Patton, and Patton said, get him out of here. I don't want to see him. Now, that's how General what was Patton's first name?
George S. Patton.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. All right. That's how you honor someone who saved your life?
It is amazing.
But the thing that the DAV did a wonderful job of bringing this out, that even though the military was still, it was not integrated at that time, where the blacks and the whites, when all of these soldiers came together in Washington, they all stood united. They were all getting along wonderfully.
Mm-hmm.
And it proves that how, when people really come together, what they can do. And so after, they were, I don't know how far before, let's just say they were betrayed by our own U.S. military when they were fired on then. And then I found it really interesting too, Deanna, about the fact they said that a lot of these guys were sent to a rehabilitation or re-education camp in Florida. And at that time, right after they got there, the largest hurricane up to that point in history for that area came to land right at that time and killed hundreds of them. The only reason it really got out was because of Hemingway being one of the first press boats that actually got in there, because even at that time, the military was trying to cover it up. And so the American people, after hearing about this, public opinion really started turning for all the bonus army.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1943 or 44, it was finally, that was why the GI Bill of Rights came into play.
Right. And you also had General Smedley Butler that was very much in favor of the bonus army. And of course, he soon went into a government facility from exhaustion, and he never left. He died. They gave him the Patton treatment, the treatment that they would give Patton later on when he was going to come home from World War II, resign his commission, and start talking about what they really did in Europe.
It's just amazing that, you know, in college, Deanna, I majored in history. And I might as well have taken that money and flushed it down the toilet.
Right.
Because I never learned of any of this.
Nope. They don't teach accurate history. They teach you the government's version of history.
Oh, absolutely. But it was just amazing to me when I saw that bonus army, because, you know, how many of them, it really changed the course of the economy and so many lives in this country. And nobody really knows how the GI Bill of Rights actually came into play. And if it weren't for those thousands of brave men that had the guts to march on Washington and do that, you know, where would we be today?
Right.
And all the veterans.
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing I was going to bring up, and I don't know, this is something I might like to look into, but when that hurricane hit and killed all of those hundreds of those our military there, it just crossed my mind. I thought, well, wasn't that one big coincidence that they sent him to the one place in America where that huge killer hurricane came on land?
Well, that must have been just before the Dust Bowl, when you had all of these horrible, horrible windstorms across the southern plains. And people had to move. They either had to suffer through, and some of them stayed, but a lot of them didn't.
Well, I found something about in, what was it, 43 or 44, where... And the name of it escapes me, the country where our government was going over on their coastlines and doing about 10 small nuclear blasts to cause tsunamis.
Oh, right, right. New Zealand.
New Zealand just
experienced one. And, of course, then you have the Haitian earthquake, and you had the tsunami in Indonesia. We're talking a lot of really big disasters that most people say, oh, what that natural disaster. And then, of course, you have Katrina and all kinds. But what it does, it certainly opens a way for the green agenda to come in and take land.
Oh, that's right. And so many people, I was amazed when I was doing research on the Nature Conservancy, and one of their, I don't know, directors, someone like that, was giving a speech, and they were so proud to say that they call it protecting, I call it grabbing, 1,000 acres of our land per day. Now, that has been, I found that last year, and I can't remember how many years ago it's been. 1,000 acres a day.
Wow.
So do they know, and we know from the protocols that they very much want our natural resources.
Sure.
But there again, you don't see people bringing it out. And I think it's critical for people to know who's behind it.
Sure. Well, the next time we're on, then you'll give us a rundown and tell us exactly who is behind all of this, this big conservation, this great big green movement, and name the names.
I will do that, and I will look forward to doing it.
All righty. Well, I certainly do appreciate chatting with you today. It's always lovely to chat with you. Feels like we're just having a visit. A couple of ladies having a visit.
That's right. It's been great, Deanna. I enjoy it. And you know what? I love getting this information out. I really do. Makes me feel like I'm actually doing something.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, so it's been great, and thank you, and I will look forward to our next visit.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.